In a literary landscape crowded with psychological thrillers, Taylor Adams' The Last Word stands apart as a masterclass in meta-horror that has captivated readers since its 2023 release. This nail-biting novel follows Emma Carpenter, a grief-stricken woman who leaves a one-star review for a poorly written horror novel, only to find herself targeted by its vengeful author. The book has earned praise from Stephen King, who called it unputdownable, and has become a book club favorite for its exploration of online harassment, grief, and the blurred lines between fiction and reality. What begins as a simple act of literary criticism spirals into a deadly game where words have life or death consequences. Emma Carpenter's life has become a self-imposed exile. Grieving and withdrawn, she spends her days in a remote beach house, reading e-books to escape reality and playing long-distance hangman with her elderly neighbor, Deke, through telescopes. Her only companion is her golden retriever, Laika. The glass walls of the beach house offer stunning views, but also create a fishbowl effect. Emma can see everything outside, and anyone outside can see her. When Emma finishes reading a 99-cent horror novel called Murder Mountain by H.G. Kane, she's unimpressed by its predictable plot, poor character development, and gratuitous violence. Following her consumer instinct, she leaves a one-star review on Amazon, thinking nothing of it. But Kane quickly responds, first with a polite request to remove the review because it hurts his income, then with increasingly hostile messages when Emma refuses. What makes this setup so compelling is how it taps into the modern digital dilemma, the ease with which we can critique others' work online versus the very real people whose livelihoods might depend on those ratings. Emma's review isn't malicious, it's honest criticism from a disappointed reader. Yet to Kane, whose identity is wrapped up in his writing, it feels like a personal attack. The power dynamic shifts rapidly from Kane as the creator seeking validation to Emma as the target of his obsession. The beach house setting amplifies Emma's vulnerability, isolated enough that help is far away, yet exposed through its glass walls. As strange occurrences begin to pile up, a bird dying against her window, a shadowy figure appearing in her bedroom at night, mysterious footprints in the sand beside her own, Emma's paranoia grows. Is she imagining things, or is someone watching her? The line between grief-induced hallucination and actual danger becomes terrifyingly thin. Emma's grief forms the emotional core of the narrative, adding layers of complexity to what could otherwise be a straightforward stalker story. Though initially we don't know what tragedy drove her to isolation, her behavior shows all the hallmarks of profound loss. Weight loss from forgetting to eat, social withdrawal, and a sense of becoming shapeless and ghost-like. Through flashbacks, we gradually learn that Emma lost her infant daughter Shelby in a car accident. A momentary distraction when Emma looked at her phone while driving resulted in her baby's death. This tragedy destroyed her marriage to Sean, who is still alive but estranged. Emma carries this guilt like the 60-pound backpack full of rocks she keeps by her door, a physical manifestation of the weight she bears. What's fascinating is how Emma's grief becomes both her greatest vulnerability and her greatest strength. Her initial numbness to danger, whatever darkness she senses, she brought it with her, makes her an easy target. Yet this same familiarity with loss gives her a unique advantage when facing Kane. She knows she's in H.G. Kane's book, and her grief has left her with little fear of death. When most people would be paralyzed by terror, Emma finds a strange clarity in her pain. The novel explores how grief can hollow us out, making us ghosts in our own lives, but also how it can forge an unexpected resilience. Emma's journey isn't just about surviving Kane's attacks, but about choosing to live again despite overwhelming loss. Her hallucination of holding Shelby while drowning presents her with a choice: surrender to the comfort of death or fight to return to the living. Her decision to surface represents the first step in her healing process. The Last Word brilliantly plays with the conventions of horror fiction by making its villain an author who's trying to write Emma into his next novel, Murder Beach. Cain sees himself as the all-powerful creator of the narrative. He studied horror tropes and believes he can control every aspect of his story, from isolating his victim to creating jump scares to orchestrating the perfect murder. The meta elements add a fascinating layer to the cat and mouse game. Cain isn't just trying to kill Emma, he's trying to force her into the role of helpless victim in his narrative. When she fights back or makes unexpected choices, he becomes increasingly unhinged because she's not following his script. His outrage at her one-star review stems partly from her rejection of his authorial authority. She didn't appreciate his work the way he believed she should. Adams cleverly includes excerpts from Cain's drafts of Murder Beach, allowing us to see how the killer perceives himself as the protagonist of his own story. In these passages, Cain portrays himself as methodical, powerful, and justified in his actions. The contrast between his self-image and reality, where he repeatedly fails to kill Emma despite having every advantage, creates both tension and dark humor. The novel also explores the blurry line between fiction and reality through Cain's disturbing confession that his previous novels might describe real murders. This revelation forces readers to reconsider the ethics of consuming violent entertainment. If Cain's books are fictional, they're merely tasteless. If they're confessions, every reader becomes an unwitting voyeur to actual atrocities. This uncomfortable possibility lingers throughout the narrative, making us question our own fascination with true crime and horror. One of the most chilling aspects of The Last Word is how easily Cain finds Emma despite her attempts at isolation. When she initially dismisses the possibility that an online stranger could track her down, she quickly discovers how much personal information is available about her online. Her digital footprint, social media posts, property records, photos with location data, professional listings, and even seemingly innocent comments on blogs creates a comprehensive trail that leads directly to her door. The novel meticulously details how Cain pieces together Emma's location through publicly available information, demonstrating how even careful internet users leave behind countless digital breadcrumbs. The novel serves as a stark warning about online harassment and how quickly it can escalate from keyboard warfare to physical danger. Cain's progression follows a terrifyingly familiar pattern. First come the polite requests for Emma to reconsider her review, then passive-aggressive comments, followed by explicit threats, doxing attempts, and finally, physical stalking and attempted murder. This escalation mirrors the real-world pattern of many harassment cases, particularly those targeting women in online spaces. His sense of entitlement to Emma's approval and his rage when it's withheld reflects the toxic dynamics that many women face online, particularly when they dare to criticize male-dominated genres like horror, gaming, or science fiction. What makes this theme particularly effective is that Emma's review wasn't even particularly harsh. She simply stated her honest opinion about a book she found disappointing, using measured language and specific examples to support her critique. The disproportionate response highlights how some creators conflate criticism of their work with personal attacks, and how quickly they can dehumanize critics to justify their retaliation. The novel explores how online discourse can rapidly deteriorate when creators view their work as extensions of themselves, treating negative reviews as personal vendettas rather than professional criticism. The novel also masterfully explores the false sense of anonymity we feel online. Emma believed she was just one of many anonymous reviewers, never imagining that her words could have life or death consequences. This misconception, that our online actions exist in a vacuum, separate from our physical lives, proves dangerously naive in an increasingly connected world. Through Emma's experience, the story demonstrates how the internet's promise of anonymity is largely illusory, and how the boundary between virtual and physical spaces has become increasingly porous. The author particularly emphasizes how women must navigate online spaces differently, always aware that their words might trigger disproportionate and dangerous reactions from men who feel threatened by their opinions. How women must navigate online spaces differently, always aware that their words might trigger disproportionate and dangerous reactions from men who feel threatened by their opinions. The story serves as a cautionary tale about digital privacy, showing how even seemingly innocuous online activities can create vulnerabilities. Emma's ordeal forces readers to confront uncomfortable questions about their own digital presence and the potential consequences of their online interactions. The author weaves in practical examples of how everyday internet usage, from geotagged Instagram posts to LinkedIn profiles, can provide determined stalkers with dangerous amounts of personal information. The character of Deacon Cowell represents one of the novel's most shocking twists. Initially presented as Emma's only friend and potential savior, this elderly neighbor and renowned true crime author seems to offer both companionship and protection. Their telescope conversations and hangman games provide Emma with her only social interaction, and his vigilance appears to be her best hope for survival when Kane attacks. However, the revelation that Deke has been manipulating both Emma and Kane creates a devastating betrayal. As a washed-up author desperate for a comeback, Deke orchestrated the entire situation, recommending Kane's book to Emma knowing she would hate it, anticipating Kane's violent reaction to her review, and planning to heroically intervene at the last minute to create material for his next bestseller. This twist forces us to reevaluate every interaction between Emma and Deke. His seemingly innocent questions about her activities on the beach, his knowledge of her name when she couldn't recall giving it to him, his excessive drinking that reminded her of her alcoholic mother, all take on sinister significance in retrospect. Even their hangman games reveal his manipulation, as he consistently beats her with medical terms like propofol and embolism that hint at his murderous intentions. Deke's character represents a particularly insidious form of predator, one who uses empathy and apparent concern to gain trust while harboring exploitative intentions. His willingness to sacrifice both Emma and Howard for his own professional gain shows a cold calculation more disturbing than Kane's more obvious rage. The contrast between his public persona as a respected author and his private actions creates a commentary on the gap between artistic success and moral character. Throughout The Last Word, personal tragedies become weapons wielded against their victims with devastating precision. Emma's profound grief over losing her daughter Shelby in a drowning accident, coupled with her painful estrangement from her ex-husband Sean, creates vulnerabilities that others exploit mercilessly. Howard's deep-seated trauma from childhood rejection and public humiliation at his middle school talent show festers into a toxic combination of rage and an insatiable need for validation, driving his cruel actions decades later. Deke proves particularly masterful at manipulating these emotional wounds. He meticulously studies both Emma and Howard's histories, identifying pressure points he can exploit to further his elaborate scheme. For Howard, Deke feeds into his victim narrative, validating his anger while subtly directing it toward Emma. With Emma, he carefully constructs situations that echo her past trauma, specifically choosing water-related threats that mirror her daughter's death. Howard's psychological attacks on Emma are brutally precise. He doesn't just mention her daughter's death, he systematically breaks down Emma's defenses by suggesting alternative scenarios where Shelby might have survived, forcing Emma to relive her choices that day. He weaponizes her maternal guilt, suggesting that a better mother would have noticed the pool gate was unlocked. These attacks serve to paralyze Emma emotionally, making her question her worth and right to survive. Deke's plan to frame Emma's murder as suicide demonstrates a particularly calculated use of personal tragedy. He knows her history of depression following Shelby's death would make authorities less likely to investigate thoroughly. He plants evidence of renewed grief, carefully crafted journal entries and staged photos of Shelby to create a narrative of a mother finally succumbing to her loss. This weaponization of trauma reflects a sophisticated form of psychological warfare. The attackers don't just hurt Emma, they attempt to erase her identity beyond her worst moments. Their tactics mirror those of skilled abusers who isolate victims by convincing them that their past mistakes define their worth and that they deserve their current suffering. By targeting Emma's deepest wounds, they aim to make her complicit in her own destruction. What makes Emma's eventual triumph particularly powerful is her ability to reclaim ownership of her narrative. When Deke attempts to stage her suicide, Emma's decision to carve "Deke killed me" into her arm becomes more than an act of defiance. It's a reclamation of her story. Later, while drowning with the weighted backpack, Emma experiences a vision of Shelby beckoning her toward peace. Instead of surrendering to this comforting illusion, she chooses to fight for life, refusing to let her tragedy become her final chapter. These moments represent Emma's fundamental rejection of others' attempts to reduce her to her past pain. The beach house where most of the action takes place functions almost as another character in the narrative. With its glass walls, remote location, and mysterious sounds, it creates both vulnerability and protection for Emma. The house's transparency means she can see danger approaching, but also that she's constantly exposed, a perfect metaphor for her emotional state as she processes her grief. The revelation that the house belongs to Howard's mother, Jules, and that Howard grew up there adds another layer of meaning. What Emma perceived as a neutral space for healing was actually the villain's territory all along. The bedroom she feared to enter was his teenage room, complete with samurai poster. He never needed to track down her address. He simply kept a key to his mother's house. This discovery forces us to reconsider earlier scenes where Emma sensed a presence in the house, the creaking, groaning, and recurring buttery smell that moved throughout the rooms. What she attributed to her own paranoia was actually Howard secretly living in the house, watching her for weeks before she ever read his book. The house's basement represents Emma's subconscious, dark, damp, and filled with things she'd rather not confront. When she chooses to flee there during Howard's attack, it's a strategic decision. The cramped space limits Howard's sword movements, but also a symbolic one. By facing what lurks in the darkness, both literally and metaphorically, Emma finds the strength to fight back. The setting's isolation also serves the plot perfectly. The quarter-mile distance between houses means help is tantalizingly close, yet practically unreachable. The beach's exposed landscape offers nowhere to hide. These elements create a constant tension between the beauty of the natural surroundings and the danger they present. Much like Emma's memories of stargazing with Sean, finding both beauty and terror in the universe. At its core, The Last Word is about the power of choice in determining our fate. Despite being victimized, Emma consistently makes active choices that keep her alive, from setting traps for her stalker, to strategically using the house's architecture against Howard, to carving a message into her arm when she believes she's about to die. Emma's most powerful choice comes when she's drowning, weighted down by her backpack of rocks. In her hallucination, she holds her daughter Shelby, experiencing the comfort and peace she's been seeking since the accident. The temptation to surrender to this vision, to finally escape her guilt and grief, is overwhelming. Yet Emma tells Shelby, "We'll be together someday, but not yet," choosing to fight for life despite its pain. This moment transforms Emma's relationship with her grief. Rather than being consumed by it, she integrates it into her identity while refusing to let it define her future. The backpack of rocks, her burden of guilt, falls away as she swims to the surface. When she later drives away from Strand Beach, she has literally and figuratively lightened her load. The novel's epilogue reinforces this theme of choice and second chances. Emma's decision to call Sean represents her willingness to face the pain of their shared loss rather than running from it. Their agreement to meet halfway in Brighton, Idaho, 5 hours from each of them, symbolizes the mutual effort required for reconciliation. The doe and fawn she sees along the way suggest the possibility of new beginnings and healing. Emma's journey from isolated, grief-stricken victim to determined survivor forms the emotional arc of the novel. When we first meet her, she's practically a ghost in her own life, having lost weight from forgetting to eat, avoiding human contact, and feeling herself becoming shapeless. Her only connection to the world is through books, which allow her to escape reality. Her transformation begins when she's forced to fight for her life. Each confrontation with Howard requires Emma to become more resourceful, more strategic, and more present in her body. She moves from passive reading to active survival, setting traps, creating weapons from household items, using the house's architecture to her advantage. These physical acts of resistance parallel her emotional journey from numbness back to engagement with life. What makes Emma compelling is that her strength doesn't come from becoming an unrealistic action hero, but from her very human combination of vulnerability and resilience. She makes mistakes, stabbing Deke instead of Howard in a moment of confusion, trusting Deke despite her instinctive wariness of him. Yet she keeps fighting, driven by a growing realization that despite her grief, she wants to live. The novel's final image of Emma driving away from Strand Beach with Laika beside her represents her reclamation of agency. She's no longer hiding or running from her past, but moving toward reconciliation with Sean. The road winds through hills and evergreens, suggesting that her path forward won't be straight or easy, but she's chosen to travel it nonetheless. Her transformation is complete when she tells Sean, "I love you," choosing connection over isolation and hope over despair. The Last Word delivers a masterful exploration of the increasingly blurred boundaries between fiction and reality in our digital age. Through its meta-narrative structure and psychological depth, the novel forces us to consider how stories shape our understanding of ourselves and others. Emma's journey from victim to survivor illustrates this transformation, particularly in how she navigates the treacherous waters between her lived experience and others' interpretations of her trauma. The novel demonstrates how social media and online forums can amplify and distort personal narratives, creating echo chambers where fiction gains the weight of truth. The psychological complexity deepens as Emma confronts multiple versions of her own story, the sanitized version her family presents, the sensationalized account in true crime blogs, and the twisted narrative her stalker creates. Each version carries its own emotional weight and consequences, highlighting how narratives can become weapons in the hands of those who wish to control or harm others. The novel particularly excels in showing how trauma survivors must often battle not just their memories, but also the public's consumption and interpretation of their experiences. The novel's most chilling insight may be how easily fiction can bleed into reality, whether through an author who can't separate criticism of his work from personal attack, a manipulative true crime writer who orchestrates real violence for literary material, or a grieving woman who must distinguish between genuine threats and the ghosts of her past. Modern technology amplifies this effect, with social media creating alternate realities where truth becomes malleable and personal boundaries increasingly permeable. The story demonstrates how online harassment can escalate into physical danger and how virtual threats can manifest in terrifying real-world consequences. In a world where online interactions can have offline consequences and where personal tragedies can be weaponized against us, The Last Word serves as both warning and empowerment. The novel explores how digital footprints become permanent markers of our experiences, sometimes trapping us in narratives we never chose to tell. Through Emma's character, we see the psychological toll of having one's personal tragedy become public property, dissected and repackaged for others' consumption. As Emma discovers, the most important story isn't the one others try to write for us, but the one we choose to live. Her journey toward reclaiming her narrative involves confronting not just her stalker, but also the various ways her story has been co-opted and distorted by others. Her final words to Sean, "I'll see you soon," carry multiple layers of meaning, suggesting both closure and new beginnings. This declaration becomes an act of agency, demonstrating that despite everything she's endured, she's ready to begin a new chapter on her own terms. And perhaps that's the most powerful last word of all, the ability to choose one's own ending.